broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University. This is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM, Delmarva Public Radio. It's time now for a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with host Harold Wilson.
Their migration was a response to an economic and social structure not of their making. They did what humans have done for centuries when life becomes untenable. What the pilgrims did under the tyranny of British rule. What the Scotch-Irish did in Oklahoma when the land turned to dust. What the Irish did when there was nothing to eat. What the European Jews did during the spread of Nazism. What the landless in Russia, Italy, China, and elsewhere did when something better across the ocean called to them. What binds these stories together was the back against the wall, reluctant yet hopeful search for something better, any place but where they were. They did what human beings looking for freedom throughout history have often done. They left. Isabel Wilkerson in The Warmth of Other Suns. Welcome to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. In our opening passage from The Warmth of Other Suns, Isabel Wilkerson is chronicling the great migration of African Americans out of the South to the Midwest, Northeast, and West from 1915 to 1970. Her work illustrates the fact that we human beings are an itinerant species. We move. Out of Africa is more than the name of a Hollywood film. According to the National Geographic's Genographic Project, some 60,000 years ago, an intrepid group of explorers ventured out of Africa and populated the entire globe. For a variety of reasons, we human beings have been on the move ever since. We're talking about immigration today, and particularly language as an aspect of human integration. My guests are Jane Elkin, author of World Class, a book of poems, and an English as a second language instructor at Anne Arundel Community College. And joining us also in the studio today are two of Jane's students, Lubna Soben, a recent emigre from France, and Sonia Lara, who came to America from Venezuela. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Jane is a founder of the Broadneck Writers Workshop and a Pushcart nominee, and in addition to being a poet and an English as a second language instructor, also works as a theater critic and a vocalist. Lubna Soben was born in to Moroccan parents in Perpignan, a beautiful little city in the south of France. She earned her bachelor's degree and worked with the handicapped before coming to the United States permanently in 2009. This was following an extended vacation in 2007. Sonia Lara is an architect and moved here 2 years ago from Caracas, Venezuela, to marry her high school sweetheart. Well, I think we'll hear some more about that a little later. Sonia, that's a strong incentive, I would suggest. Jane, let me begin with you. Your book is titled World Class. Tell us about your book and when you began writing poetry.
Well, the entire title of the book is World Class, poems inspired by the ESL classroom because it was really my students that, without meaning to, prompted me to write the book. It began with one haiku in my first year of teaching, and then 2 years later, another poem about my most unforgettable student. And then the poems just started rushing out of me, but I did not set out to be a poet in life. I was a professional singer, and when I encountered vocal health issues, poetry started happening because my creativity needed somewhere else to go. Now I do both. I sing and I write.
Well, tell us, Jane, first of all, what is a haiku?
A haiku is a Japanese form, the five syllables in the first line, seven syllables in the second line, five in the last line. But in America, we refer to them as the American sentence, and it's actually a whole subgenre.
Well, would you read your haiku for us and tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, this was inspired by the first day of school in a very elementary class. There was a beautiful young woman from China sitting in between two elderly ladies from Korea. And this is what I observed. In ESL class, where new friends can't converse, they hold hands, beaming joy.
See, how does that haiku express both your experience in the classroom and how does it express the poetry in your book?
Well, for me personally, it brought home the basic humanity and the joy of just being with a friendly face, being in a new place, not knowing anybody, and being able to turn to your neighbor and appreciate the smile on their face and that you're all going through the same thing together. And for the students, I think it's just that human crutch that we all need. And when we don't have language, all we have is our bodies, the expression on our face, what we can do with our hands, and that smile that we use to draw others in.
Lubna and Sonia, you were students in Jane's class. Is she also expressing your feeling about being in this classroom and learning English, or were you too focused on I've got to learn this language to experience the closeness and the warmth of your neighbors?
Of course, we have feelings when we came from another country. It's very difficult to communicate with another person. We were crying when I can't communicate my words. But my first teacher teach me a lot in this moment, and I'm very grateful with her.
Lubna? When I saw the class with Jane, the first time I like her, and the first time I saw her, and she teach very well. She has patience with us, and we like our teacher.
Well, what I hear you express though is Sonia, it's the isolating sense of not knowing. Mm-hmm. The language, the common language. And we're going to come back and talk about that a little bit later. But, Jane, I read in the introduction to your book that your poems are composed in an accentual verse. So is that a style of poetry like a haiku is a style and a format
of
poetry?
It's the oldest style of spoken word. back when Beowulf was written, it was done in accentual verse. Accentual verse says that as we speak, we stress certain syllables, and so we're aiming for the same number of strong beats in each line. And so I was looking for the natural rhythm in speech, because one of the things I do in class is stretch the natural rhythm of American speech, as opposed to so many other languages. Some of them don't have a stress. They sound equally stressed. Others have a different stress than American English does, and even British English.
Well, the poem Foreign Soil in your book appears to me, at least, to reflect the style. Would you read this poem for us, and then talk a little bit about how it reflects an accentual style?
Sure. It's called Foreign Soil. My students arrive in dust storms of change. Denims, saris, suits, all ages, from Persia's Gulf to Ganges banks, desert sands, Andes peaks, blood red rank poor lands, carrying seeds of rich loam through arid, rocky, barren years, acclimating, blooming in time, soaking up language's miracle grow. They till the words until the words that prick their ears at last make sense, sprouting from their tongues in accents lush as rustling crop leaves. And when I wrote this poem, I was using the four strong beats per measure to give a sort of marching feel. I wanted that sensation of walking forward, moving on, moving on, moving on.
So this is a progress.
Yes.
Poem. In a sense. Well, let me ask you, what is Miracle Grow in terms of the development of language? You use that, I think it's a wonderful phrase, soaking up language's Miracle Grow. They till the words until the words that prick their ears at last make sense.
Without language, you can't grow. You're stuck wherever you are. Think Helen Keller, before she could hear, before she could speak, before she could read Braille, and she was locked in a very private world and could not grow as a person until Annie Sullivan taught her how to communicate. Fortunately, all of my students can see and they can hear, and they can at least verbalize to the people of their own culture. But those who come with a very rudimentary knowledge of English or no knowledge of English at all are truly hampered by that inability to communicate. They can only operate within the theater of their own subculture in this world.
I think that's what we were saying, in a sense, of the isolation of not being able to communicate in a language. But you also say in this poem, sprouting from their tongues in accents lush as rustling crop leaves. What explain to us what you mean in terms of accents lush.
Well, to hear people from five different continents speaking the same thing, as we sometimes do in chorus in class, I will say a line and I want the class to repeat it. And what I get back has different colors of vowel sounds, different register of volume or pitch, and it is a lot like that sensation of walking through a cornfield and hearing this mishmash of rustling around you. It's what we're aiming for is that everybody will sound the same and be understandable, but it's not always the case. Some of my students want to get through a sentence very, very quickly with no stress, and others are struggling to pronounce words, and maybe they finish up three words behind the rest of the class.
So it sounds to me like, though, you make the comment to sound the same and be understandable. But then when we talk about accents lush, it seems to me that we're looking more at being understandable.
Yes.
And then perhaps sounding similar.
Exactly.
So that what is being said is understandable to,
yes,
to the rest of
them. I'm not trying to eradicate their accents completely, but I need an accent to be understandable. If I don't know how I can delicately say this, but I had a student who would mispronounce the word beach, and she thought that
you have to be careful.
That there was a swear word. She thought there was a swear word that sounds like the place where we go for recreation in the summer, and it could be very embarrassing. And so I was working with her on the pronunciation of that vowel.
Right. Right. No, that's really quite good. You talk about all of your students. All of your students are very serious about learning the language, I know, because it's crucially important to them in terms of getting along in their new country.
12 hours a week they dedicate to my class, and these are people with jobs and families.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah. Well, you have one person, Abil. Abil Chinar.
By the way, these are not the true names of my students.
Okay. Okay. We'll be careful anyway. But he was kind of a cut up.
Yes.
We would use that English phrase, a cut up, in your class. And you wrote a poem.
Yes.
It seems to me you found him so delightful, although exasperating.
Perfectly put.
that you wrote a poem about him. Read us the poem.
Sure. Before I read it, let me explain. I did something a little different in this poem. I went with a mother goose type of a couplet, because Abil Chinar was truly a case of arrested development. He was an adolescent in an adult's body as a result of his youth in less than typical circumstances. He did not mature as he should have. So I call the poem The ABCs of Abil Chinar. When Abil Chinar comes to class, his favorite comedy shtick is greeting classmates in accents that mimic their speech. Quite a trick. When he sees a pretty young girl, he gawks from behind his notebook, unable to turn away, unable to take a good look. When I return papers face down and leave the room on an errand, Abil Chinar turns them over, unaware that he might offend. When I call on students in turn and ask him to please remain quiet, he talks with his hands as if mute. I scold, but I think he's a riot. I thought I was done teaching kids, but Abil Chinar's a reprise. At 32 going on 12, he embodies the ABCs. A for Afghan refugee. He lost the best years of his life in relocation camps. No schooling, no job, no wife. Amblyopic, ADHD, attention-starved, aimless, a perennial adolescent who nevertheless is blameless. B for blushing boy child, blessed with moxie and wit. Braggart, who claims to know all, though nearly illiterate. Bound up in Muslim tradition, birthright of favored first son, He spent his whole youth being told he was better than everyone. C for computer whiz, solving my technical trials. Wannabe teacher's pet. Courteous helper, all smiles. Cockeyed and callow and cursed by war's ill-timed circumstance. Only fit for class clown. Given up hope of advance. Rich by immigrant standards, his dad drops him off in a Lexus. Then one day, he's not there. Someone said they moved to Texas. Class is suddenly calm, too calm and ordered, by far. We all pine for the boisterous character known as Abiel Chanar.
Abiel Chanar was a presence.
Yes.
in your class, and as a result, is missed.
Absolutely.
Very much.
And he was so smart, and he had such potential. And I just really wanted to help him get over that hump to where he could have the confidence to go find work.
As a teacher, do you see that happening?
Oh, yes. Yes. I had a student just come to me last week. She was trained as a singer in Puerto Rico, and she took the dental assistant training course, and she brought me an invitation to her graduation ceremony this week, and she's about to go into a full-time job with benefits. I had another student who was working part-time cleaning at BJ's, and she just hated her job, and I helped her get a full-time position with the county schools as a custodian, and she loves her new job. She can be home when her kids come home from school. She has health care now. So sometimes it works out.
As a teacher, how do you deal with a student like Abiel? Did you with exasperation? Were there particular methods though in terms of teaching English that you used to work with him?
Yeah, I had to treat him the way I treated the students in my elementary school classes. I used to teach in an elementary school for 13 years. And I would give him very strict rules. You do not speak unless it is your turn. And when he actually started breaking that rule, I would send him out into the hall for timeout. Mm-hmm. Because he needed that reminder that adults do not step on each other's conversation. Mm-hmm. Because I knew that would hinder him in life here in America. He just couldn't go around doing that. I had a student this semester, I've had him for 2 years, and I'm still working on that with him, but he's come a long way.
Is he from?
He's from China, mm-hmm. and he was a constant interrupter. Mm-hmm. And he mm-hmm. doesn't do that anymore. In fact, now he actually, once he covered his mouth and he said, "Oops, I'm sorry, I interrupt." And I wanted to cheer.
Well, I wanted to ask you, is there with someone like Abiel and your student from China who interrupts and who wants to have attention paid to them, is there any kind of sense that being inhibited in the language creates a kind of insecurity in them that makes them, if they can't express in the language what they want, they will do it another way?
Sure. Just like children that we grew up with, the class clown was frequently the student who was not a great student or who was neglected at home and is attention starved.
Yeah. We, from Abiel Chanar, the class cut up, we would say, your poem, Pasmaya Under Pressure, is a much more serious look at the kind of pressures that immigrants into this country might face, and I don't know if this is more characteristic. You two can answer this Sonia and Lubna in a moment, but this kind of pressure seems to me to be more like the pressure that immigrants may face, especially early.
Yes.
Early on.
I do have students like Lubna and Sonia who are educated and come to this country with skills, but many of my students come without an education, and so they're scrambling to make a living any way they can. And Paz Maya, who is from Mexico, she was one of those students.
Well, read that poem, if you would,
sure.
Jane.
Paz Maya Under Pressure. Lesson 6, leisure, seems like a cruel joke to me. For most of my students, a day at the beach is as good as it gets. We practice frequency adverbs in hypothetical skits. How often do you eat out? Paz Maya, sighing, says, never. I don't have time. She works double shifts at McDonald's, a widow supporting a clan, her mother, who's dying of cancer, her daughter-in-law, who stays home to nurse her and tend to 5 kids. Their father was shot to death. This woman's ripe for a breakdown, playing dodgeball with her health. I wish I could pamper her. How good a massage would feel, or a shopping spree for herself. But I can't adopt every problem, and she can't make time to eat out. Besides, she might be insulted. This dynamo who comes to class with Valentine truffles for me, brimming with questions that prove she will never, ever give up.
Do you find this kind of spirit in the majority of the students that you teach?
Yes, I do. It's frequently the reason they're late to class, is because they're juggling night shift with coming to school, dropping off their kids at school. Then they go home and they catch a cat nap before they go cook dinner and go off to work again. And yet they take notes and they ask intelligent questions. I mean, I even spent 3 years teaching French at the Naval Academy, and most of my Naval Academy students were not as invested in their language class as these people are. They know that they need the language, they want it, and they're just so attentive and wonderful.
We're going to take a short break. Now, my guests are Jane Elkin and recent immigrants to the U.S., Lubna Sobin and Sonia Lara.
Hi, this is Helen Forster inviting you to tune into E-Town every Sunday at 7 p.m. right here on WSDL 90.7. Each week, we bring you great live music, in-depth conversation, and inspiring stories about people who are really making a difference. That's E-Town, Sundays at 7 p.m. right here on WSDL 90.7.
Welcome back to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. We're talking about immigration, and my guests are poet and English as a second language instructor, Jane Elkin, and recent immigrants, Lubna Sobin and Sonia Lara. Lubna, you immigrated from France and from the beautiful south of France,
yeah,
as well. Tell us a bit about yourself and particularly why you decided to come to the United States to live.
Okay. I came from France. I'm from France, and I grew up over there. My parents are Arabic. They're from Morocco. And I lived over there. I take my degree. And when I was on vacation, I met my husband, and he invited me to come here to visit. I came first time on 2007. I really didn't like the country. It was big, and I miss a lot my family.
Where did you come to on your vacation here?
Where?
Yeah, where did you come to? Annapolis or New York?
New York.
You went to New York.
It was too big for me, big city for me, and after that, I decided to move on and come here to live with my husband. Mm-hmm. My husband, he was here for 13 years. He lived here for 13 years, and when I came here, I found everything I need. Yeah.
So you met your husband here while you were on your vacation?
I met my husband in Morocco.
Ah.
Yeah.
And what were you doing in Morocco? Visiting relatives?
Yeah, vacation. My parents are from Morocco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Your parents, you grew up in France, yeah. I understand. Mm-hmm. And so did your parents move to France from Morocco?
Yeah, my father moved to France in 1975.
Mm-hmm. And were you born in France?
Yeah, in France.
In France. Yeah. And so you, was it Perpignan?
Perpignan, yeah.
That you grew up?
Yeah, a small city, but a beautiful city.
Yeah. So you speak, I understand, you obviously French. That's your native language, I would imagine. And then you learned Arabic in the family. Yeah. Was that?
I speak Arabic. Mm-hmm. I can write and read Arabic, but I can't speak.
Mm-hmm. And what was life like for you with your Moroccan heritage? What was life like for you in France, growing up in France?
Growing up in France, it was a little bit hard for us, especially now if you are Arabic and Muslim, it's a little bit hard in France. We have freedom, but not like America. I feel I'm more happy here than France because we can show our religion over there. And in France, 20% of people are unemployed. It's a big problem to find a job, especially if you are young and no experience.
Was it difficult in France to find a job as a Muslim? Did that have anything to do?
If you show your religion, you can go to school, you can find a job, you can do nothing.
So even in a smaller city like Perpignan,
it's everywhere. You know, French people, they don't accept immigrants. It's very difficult because my parents, they work every day for us, and they know it's like racist. A lot of racists in France, but we can live like that if you want to do something good in your life.
Sonia, so tell us a bit about yourself as well and your life in Caracas, I believe, and what made you decide to come to the United States?
I came from Venezuela because I got married 2 years ago. I think that I don't move if for another reason. But in this moment, my country is a disaster. It's going through a terrible crisis, political, economical. But in that moment, it's not a big wrong, be the problem. But I came here for love. But it's a great country. I like so much to live here. I'm very surprised for this. It's a country with a good opportunities. It's a beautiful country. The people is a great people. Like this.
And you're an architect, I understand. Mm-hmm. And you're working as an architect now?
Yes, I begin because I did my equivalence in my grade, and I am bachelor in architect here right now, and it's been my my job in Venezuela for 25 years, and I need to work in my...
Did you find it difficult or easy to get a job in your field when you came here?
I'm not employed right now. I work by myself.
Okay.
Yes.
Self-employed.
I am self-employed. And but I want to know, because my English is my first problem, and in order to get unemployed, no, but I don't know, maybe later.
Mm-hmm. So you work as a consultant now, we would say? You work for other architects?
Yes, I right now work with another architect, and in order to learn what is the architect here, the way to work in this job, no, and it's very interesting because it's the same but another kind of measure, the kind of in my country we work with a metric system. This is another system, and I was trying to.
So now all of a sudden you're dealing with inches and
yes.
quarter inches and feet, and
yes,
listen,
yes.
that's confusing regardless.
Yes.
It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But your boyfriend was already living here. Is that what happened?
My husband, yes, he lives here from 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He's Venezuelan, but right now he's a citizen in America.
We had a friend a while back, a number of years ago, a doctor friend named Sydney. We say young doctor. And he was Oriental. I don't know where he was from, whether I don't think it was China, but some other country. And we were talking to him about where he was going to go when he went into practice. And his comment was, well, I don't know. I was thinking about Singapore, and I was thinking about going to France, and I was thinking about maybe even Australia. And I don't know where Sydney wound up, quite frankly, but the choices for him were enormous in terms of where he would go to set up his practice. Lubna.
Yeah.
You came to the United States. Were there other choices that you considered? Were there other countries that you thought, well, instead of the, you know, why don't I immigrate to Canada? Why don't I immigrate?
Yeah, no. Because I got married.
No.
That's
no.
the only reason I came here. I changed my country.
So, so to be with the one you love is the reason.
That's the only reason.
That's the only reason. Yeah. And so he was here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and Sonia, that sounds like pretty much the same
mm-hmm.
for you. There was no other choice for you.
Before I know that I get married, I was thinking about to move to Canada. My brother lived in Canada, and I changed my plans.
Well, that makes sense. Did you know, Sonia, did you know English before you came to the States?
A little bit, yes. Because I studied English since kindergarten. But when we realized here, I know speak English. No, it's not the speak English. it's another stuff. It's that different. When you live in Venezuela, when you come here, you came here, it's, the story is totally different.
Well, I can identify with you to a degree because I took French in school, and when I went to France, it was like, wait a minute, what are they speaking here? This is like nothing I heard when I was at university back in those early days. So, Luna, when you came to this country, what kind of difficulties did you encounter, other than the language, perhaps? What, in terms of integrating yourself into the society here and the culture here and finding friends and so forth?
That's a big problem. Friends, I don't have any friends. Now I have friends, but it's Arabic. They are Arabic. They are not American. I'd like to
make more friends.
Yeah, to make more friends, but American friends. And the big problem when I came here was the place. I don't know where I can find what I need. But the big problem I got stuck is the language.
But because of the language, both of you do very well, though. I think that's credit to your teacher.
It's them.
but I can see the necessity, and I would imagine you can too, of knowing and learning the language. But Lubna, what I hear you saying is that you want to broaden your contacts. You want to expand the number of
friends.
Do you have a plan for doing that? Do you have a thought about how you might do that?
No, I have no plan for this time.
So right now you're in a circle of Arabic speakers
French speaker.
Okay, you'll take either one, right? So we're gonna add English English to that. And Sonia, the same for you. What kind of difficulty have you had in becoming integrated into the communities, community where you live?
My first problem was language, talk English. But my second problem is relate my job. How can I do to work if I can speak English? It's my big problem, and I feel like a stuck in a big problem, and I was very concerned. I feel that in the last time, 3 months ago, 5 months ago, is when I go move. I start to move in this, but a year and a half, I was feeling very concerned about this.
Mm. How did it turn out that you began your classes in English as a second language?
When I came, I was my first concern, and I looked the class in English, and I met the teacher, and Jane, my teacher, I'm very grateful with her because he pushed me to, you speak very well, you are an architect, you can do it, you can do it. And
and you can. That's wonderful, wonderful.
Wonderful. I think I can.
Wonderful advice. And Lubna, the same with you. How did you find and why did you go to the English as a second language class?
I would like to teach French. And of that, I need to learn English. And I went to the college and I asked for class. For the beginning, on the beginning English, and I started the class on August with Jane.
Jane, I understand that that you, from what you've said, you are a French teacher, and you do speak French. How did you learn French? How did you learn your second language? And how difficult was it for you?
Fortunately, I was blessed with a sound adaptability. Because I'm a singer, language comes easily to me because language is all about pitch and volume and stress, just like music. But I studied French in high school and then not again until I was an adult. My husband received a scholarship through the military to study abroad. And as part of our preparation, they sent me to the Defense Language Institute for 6 months along with him. So it was full time, 8 hours a day plus homework at night. So I arrived in Switzerland, French-speaking Switzerland, with what I thought was an excellent preparation. And I went to the neighborhood grocery store that first day, and I conducted all of my transaction in French. And I was so proud of myself. And the cashier said, "It's so nice to see a tourist trying to speak our language." And I wanted to say, but I'm not a tourist. I live here and I'm not trying, I'm doing.
So what kind of pressures did you feel? Were you able to work in Switzerland?
No,
or?
Well, and I didn't want to either. I had two very young children at the time, and so I was happy to stay home with them. And also, I did not have the proper kind of paperwork to look for a job in Switzerland. So that was not an issue. But socially, it was a problem. I tried to find volunteer work. And actually, volunteerism is a uniquely American thing. I went through my church and said, "I'd like to help out in an old age home." And I was told that wouldn't really be an option because of my accent, that people wouldn't be able to understand me. And I would experience discrimination routinely in shops as soon as they heard me speak because I had this American accent. People would tell me, "We don't have what you're looking for." And then when I could point to it on the shelf and explain myself very clearly in their language, albeit with an accent, then they had to pay attention to me. It was hard making friends. Fortunately, my oldest daughter was in kindergarten, so I met some other families that way. But primarily, it was through my hobbies that I made friends. I always find a singing group, no matter where I moved. And as a military wife, I moved a lot. And every time we moved, the boxes were not even unpacked before I was starting to go to rehearsals and meet people.
So that was your intro to the culture. Well, let me ask you this, and maybe, Lubna, you have an insight here as well. I know that Canadian French is somewhat different in accent and to some of the words even than the French in France, particularly. I don't know about Morocco, but is the French in Sweden is
in Switzerland.
In Switzerland, is that different than the French you learned in school?
Yeah, all of our teachers told us how lucky we were to be going to Switzerland because their language is spoken rather sing-song and much slower than the French in France.
And how did you find it when you got
there? It was still hard to understand. I mean, it takes a lot of listening practice.
We're an interesting country in the sense that I would suggest that at least at the time being, our demographics are changing here so radically and quickly, but currently, most Americans do not speak a second language. So we have not had the struggle of having to learn another language. And yet, from what you've said, and you, Sonia and Lubna, have said how important it is to be able to speak a second language. And I know you felt, you mentioned, Jane, that you felt isolated in a sense when you were unable to communicate effectively in the language.
Yeah, well, that was especially unique to the country where I was living. I found it much easier to have conversations with strangers in France than I did in Switzerland. And one of my closest friends, whom I met through the choir, she grew up in a different part of French-speaking Switzerland, just 2 hours away, and said that she experienced so much discrimination as a newlywed coming from a city 2 hours away that she had no friends for 2 years. So if that could happen to somebody who grew up there, imagine what it was to be a foreigner.
Well, let me ask you, Sonia, a new immigrant to this country, what would you advise them? What would you say to them if they came to you and said, "What should I do?" A new immigrant to America. What would you advise them? And Lubna, you can be thinking because I'm going to ask you also.
I told that it's a great country with opportunities if you can find it, and the English language is a struggle, but it's something with what if you can do it, you can do it. And it's a great country, yes. I'm very happy because I feel that my family has a quality of life, has a great opportunity by my children, and it's a good opportunity.
And Lubna?
For everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lubna?
The thing I would have to have as an immigrant here is a group for immigrants or place or association to show us what the place or what we can do as an immigrant, the school, the everything we need. Mm. That's a big problem because when as an immigrant we don't know nothing. Mm-hmm. That was my big problem.
To find a community, to integrate yourself. Yeah. And what would you say,
Well,
Jane?
She just hit on something I had not formalized in thought before, but we frequently go off topic in class. I don't like to stick to the textbook because I feel I'm there to answer a variety of questions. And it always happens. Somebody wants to know how our country works with a very specific question in mind. For example, the schools. What do you call the school for this age and for that age? And what progression and what tests do they take? And how can my child get into applying to colleges and earn scholarship money? Or how do I book a hotel room for two people? And we haven't gotten to that chapter yet. Just the basic things that we all need to know. They don't know where to go for a service that we take for granted.
We started the program with a short reading from Isabel Wilkerson's book, The Warmth of Other Suns. And that book describes the great migration of African Americans out of the South in the United States. And that migration occurred between 1915 and 1970. And African Americans moved north and moved to the Northwest and West for a variety of reasons, and those included the pressure of segregation, the Jim Crow laws of the South, which you might learn about if you don't know about that era in our history in the South already, and limited economical and educational opportunities. I think on this program, in the couple of minutes left, it would really be remiss if we didn't mention the war in Syria and the thousands of people fleeing that region now. The movement of refugees almost as large as during and after the Second World War. And they are not leaving for love, as Sonia and Lubna, as you two did. They're fleeing for their lives, and they are fleeing by the thousands. At first, they were welcomed to cross the borders and head for Germany and Austria. Now the borders are closing, and in this discussion of immigration, we have these refugees who are trying to find a better life. And let me ask you, as an immigrant, how do you think the world, how should we be responding to this movement of peoples? And we only have a moment left, so.
I would encourage people who have connections to churches to volunteer to take in refugee families if you have extra space.
Any thought, Lubna or Sonia, how the world should deal with this migration of peoples?
It's a human right. It's very sad to see this problem. It's a big problem. It's very sad to see the news and the countries close the frontier. It's very sad. I think that European Union do the solution to that big problem. It's impossible to let these people die.
Well, I think we would all agree, and it's a huge problem that we need to deal with. And I'd like to end our discussion with the poem by Richard Wright, from which the title of Wilkerson's book, The Warmth of Other Suns, is taken. And here Richard Wright. I was leaving the South to fling myself into the unknown. I was taking a part of the South to transplant in alien soil, to see if it could grow differently, if it could drink of new and cool rains, bend in strange winds, respond to the warmth of other suns, and perhaps to bloom. Lubna and Sonia, you have certainly bloomed here, and our country is enriched by what you have brought with you of your culture from Venezuela and from France and Morocco.
Thank you.
We would say, and Jane, you have reminded us with your poetry that we are all immigrants here. Let me ask you one final question. Your book, World Class, Poems Inspired by the ESL Classroom, how can people get your poetry book?
It's available on Amazon.com and through the publisher Apprentice House at Loyola in Baltimore.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you for being with us today, Jane, Lubna, and Sonia. And thanks to all of you for listening to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.
Thank you, Helen.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a special Writer's Edition of Delmarva Today with your host, Harold Wilson. This program is produced on the campus of Salisbury University for Delmarva Public Radio. Christopher Rank is your audio engineer. Mary Seaman is the volunteer producer. Visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, for podcasts of this program.